Welcome to another Castrovers podcast with a K. I haven't said it like that for a while. I'm Christian Corley, and with me are James McLean and Gareth Cavana. And
we're back. Give me a woo. No one else gives me one. I've got a fan out there as well. My fan dials in specifically to hear me say woo. So, and I'm unanimous in that.
Well, hello there, fan.
Yes.
And we're here for some more Doctor Who talk. And we were thinking about Doctor Who crossovers, really, largely, I think, weren't we? Before we do that, though, there's something I've been meaning to mention for a couple of podcasts and haven't. And that is, I got a surprising package the other day through the door.
Okay.
And what it was, this is a callback to a much older podcast with a K from several years ago, in which we interviewed Andrew Cartmell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, he's lovely, Andrew.
Yeah. And Hans Christian Vang. And it was all about the Fan Fiction Illustrated.
Oh, yes.
Which fell through my letterbox a few days ago.
Oh, it's out. What does it look like?
It's kind of US trade format. It's shiny. It's nice. There's some interesting artwork in there. Varied. It's turned out quite well, I think. It's about 70 pages. It's nice.
Impressive. Well, yeah. That's been in development hell for
a long
years,
time. Yeah.
So fair play to them for getting it out there.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Yeah. I just want to check when we it was 2012.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Good Lord.
We had that conversation. So that's 7 years.
God, I mean, what did we have? What did we not know in 2012? I mean,
good
in
Lord.
Terms, that is a lifetime ago.
Isn't it just? Yeah. So that's out. I don't know how general its availability is. But there are, there's Phantom of the Space Opera by Andrew Cartmell, Mike Dwyer, Christian Fang, and Flavio Silva. There is Bodies of the Sidemen by Matthew Tofolo and Pedro Lopez. And Seventh Doctor and Ace as they square off against pirates and ghostly dinosaurs in a story from the Cartmell Master Plan, Phantom Freight, by Andrew Cartmell and Kleber Souza. So, if you can get hold of that, do so, because it's nice.
Are they all comic strips, or are there any?
They appear to be all comic strips. All comic strips throughout.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know where people can get hold of it?
At the moment, no. But I will put something in the show notes. I'll do some research and put something in the show notes. Fanfictionmagazine.com would seem to be the smartest answer at this moment, though.
Well done all. Goes to show. I mean, to be fair, it takes us about 6 years to get a warp out, so that feels about right.
Yeah, it's good.
Fanfictionmagazine.com.
There you go. There you go, dear listener. So, anyway, we were thinking about Doctor Who crossovers, and same format as that. There was a Doctor Who crossover on Star Trek some years ago, which featured... It was a strange one, because it mainly featured the 11th Doctor and the Next Generation crew. But there was a sidestep issue which featured the 4th Doctor and the original series crew, which was my favourite. That was my favourite issue. Great, it was really good, though. Yeah. It's a shame the whole thing hadn't been like that, but presumably because there was a current Doctor, they had to use the current Doctor. That was back when Doctor Who was published by IDW Comics.
Yes. I never read that. Was it any good?
Well, the 4th Doctor issue was good. The rest of it was okay. Wasn't great. I've never really... they're enjoyable enough, but there's... I've never really taken to the IDW comics in the way that I took to the DWM comics, 20 years ago. So...
But the Doctor doesn't really fit into Star Trek, does he? You know, I mean, this is all... I haven't read it, so I can't speak as someone who read it, but, I can't imagine many incarnations of the Doctor settling in happily with the Enterprise crew.
Mm.
Which is odd, really, given, well, maybe with the original lot. If you think of things like Squire of Gothos, and there was sort of where you have these characters which are sort of very much sort of very based within the history, human history, for sort of Victorian Edwardian. You could imagine that sort of Doctor existing in that sort of sense, like some sort of backdoor pilot to another show being wedged into one of the seasons. But yeah, it's an odd show because I suppose the whole point of Doctor Who is that it's like an anthology, isn't it? With the same character in each story, but they're in different genres, different tones. So it doesn't really have a consistency of tone to fit with anything else, which is meant to have a consistency of tone.
I suppose I could imagine it in a sort of Third Doctor trapped on Earth unit kind of scenario, I suppose, to be fair. I could see it being like that. And was it the Next Generation Star Trek views?
Yeah, it was. This also came out in 2012, funnily enough. And it's called Assimilation Squared.
But that's the only Star Trek crew that I think has a slightly Doctor Who-y kind of, you know, let's talk, we don't fire. You know, it's sort of, it's warm and fuzzy and consensual. It isn't like the original series or the movies where, you know, it's like, you know, it's punch first and ask questions later. It's a more cerebral. So I suppose, I suppose the Next Generation and Doctor Who just about lets you have your cake and eat it. And I suppose the Doctor would broadly end up being like a sort of, you could see, I suppose, the Next Generation, the McCoy Doctor and Q all sitting together quite nicely in a story, I guess.
You could see, and again, part of its aesthetics and tone and era, say the McGann movie could sort of almost fit in to a kind of feeling of the Next Generation, because he is so typified as the British English, you know, the Englishman in New York, sort of, you know, the other alien, that he would fit that sort of very stereotype, that sort of stereotype within Star Trek Next Generation. I could appear him accidentally appearing on a transporter pad in a sort of quirky music and this weird, odd, slightly charming, youthful. So he's got the aesthetic which would suit an American production, especially of the Next Generation era, where most of the sort of charming antagonists would tend to be quite good looking characters that I can recall. So maybe I could see McGann in there as well. But it doesn't really fit with anything. I mean, even like Blake 7, which it has a very strong tie in terms of production, in terms of authorship, in terms of cast, and in terms of, to some degree, some narrative lines as well that have obviously been used to connect them. And there were questions at the time, weren't there, whether they could be connected. Quite fit, if you see what I mean.
Well, Blake 7 is an aesthetic fit. You know, if you've got Dudley Simpson doing all the music on both, and you've got June Hudson designing most of the costumes on both in that fertile late 70s, you know, period of lovely Who goodness, then, yeah, I think that it does become, by default, a shared universe in the same way that all of those sitcoms, you know, become a shared universe. You know, I could see Terry and June moving in next to Tom and Barbara Good in a spin-off from The Good Life, you know, Terry June Good or something. So I see that. But tonally, Blake 7 and Doctor Who in the late 70s are quite different, really.
Well, to some degree, but I could imagine, say, The Sunmakers.
Yeah,
you take the Doctor out of that.
Oh, okay.
You know, do you see what I mean? If you remove the Doctor out of his own universe, a lot of the stories become very different as soon as you don't have him involved. Of course, that's become very interesting for fictions and spin-offs and the like, as we've seen through Big Finish and even things like Torchwood, I guess. But so some of them, I could imagine that sort of weird sort of cardboardy future of the 70s and 80s of Doctor Who, I could almost imagine Blake 7 could fit in there if you take the Doctor out, if that makes sense. And Boucher has sort of explored that idea.
It's the Bouchverse. So that's true. And actually, that's something that Alan Stevens always picked up really cleverly with his Caldor City spin-offs, is you did get, because he obviously takes some of Boucher's characters from Blake 7 and puts them in Caldor City, and Caldor City clearly is in the Doctor Who world. Yeah. So yes, they all fit together. In that sense, yeah, it's the Blake Seven is that darker, doctorless universe. It's a place of squalid deals and dictatorship and all the worst excesses of humanity, without the Doctor to breeze in and save the day. But as I always say, you know, the Sunmakers, arguably, what does the Doctor do that's of help? He breezes in, helps overthrow the status quo, buggers off and goes, oh, you lot will all be fine. I'm sure the Earth is all right by now. Get yourself on them cargo freighters. See you later. And buggers off. They're all dead in a year. I guarantee you. The whole of Pluto is dead. The rich 0.5% of the population bugger off in the cargo thrusters, and everyone else is left behind to starve and slowly die of cold as all the suns run down.
Sounds like a pitched New Adventures novel.
Oh, it's very, it's a very New Adventure. Well, I always imagine it as being like, have you ever seen the Out of the Unknown, The Machine Stops?
No.
Have a look. It's a good one. But that's the essence, is that everyone lives in this sort of artificial world and everything's done for them. But all the machinery that underpins their world is beginning to slowly fail. And everything is failing year by year, and no one knows how to fix it anymore. And it ends with them all dying in the darkness. It's a brilliant piece. It's on the wonderful BFI compilation of the remaining Out the Unknown episodes. It's a must purchase if you haven't got it. Really,
I suppose the interesting thing with Doctor Who is what do you extract to make those universes? Like with Blake Seven, for instance. With Doctor Who, it's not just about taking the Doctor out. The Doctor Who deals with time travel, and Blake Seven seemed to be very keen to avoid ever going down those paths. There's never any mention of...
Well, does Doctor Who deal with time travel at that time? It doesn't. Doctor Who, just the TARDIS arrives, they do lots of stuff in between, the TARDIS leaves.
But you're still running on the assumption the Doctor Who universe, whatever you want to call it, has time travel, while the Blake Seven universe, which is actually fairly... in a lot of ways functional, bar the alien spacecraft thereon, which is hyper. Let's imagine.
All right, but for argument's sake, let's say something like Image of the Fendal in Doctor Who. Argument's sake. Yep. Doctor arrives with Leela. The stuff with the scientists is already happening, and then there's a resolution. There is no reason on Earth that you couldn't have that... same story happens, but instead of the Doctor and Leela arriving, it's the Liberator crew arrives, the same adventure happens, and then they do something very clever with a switch and bugger off at the end. And you could even have all the people in white coats, and you could even have it set in the old manor house, because on the planet Zarg, they've imported this old house stone by stone, because... Pendleman is the richest man in the galaxy and loves that house, and it would be the same story. There would be nothing different about that story.
But could you imagine, and I'm not saying you couldn't, but would an episode where Villa and Avon found a temporal portal which could take them back to Earth 1979, I couldn't see that in that sort of sense, even though if we assume that they existed in the same universe, that would be a potential thing that could be that could happen. I'm not saying it couldn't, but it's not something that really
that's basically City on the Edge of Forever, and actually
that's the truth to that, I guess. Yeah,
a City on the Edge of Forever with Avon and Villa is really appealing. I like that as an idea.
Well, City on the Edge of the World. 1979, and it's Doctor Who only went to Earth once in 1979, if I remember correctly. In 1979, and that was Paris.
It was a vintage year.
Yes. clearly rare.
You've got an interesting thing there.
Well, as I'm contractually obliged to mention it in every podcast, although I didn't in the last one. Yeah, you could. There is no reason that Horns of Nymon couldn't have been the Blake Seven Christmas episode one year. None at all.
Well, I mean, the thing with Blake Seven, though, which differs to Doctor Who, and again, I'm not saying that they don't cross over, because evidently in some ways they obviously did or do. Even Lance Parkin, to pun his name, parks a position within the Doctor Who chronology where Blake Seven could exist. Is that you don't have in Blake Seven, you don't tend to have, apart from the Andromedans, who we never see really, apart from a couple of potential ones in Star One, you don't get massive races like in Doctor Who, where you have the Daleks, you have the Ice Warriors, you have the Cybermen, and while you
It's all humanity. Yeah,
it's largely humanity. And again, this doesn't mean it couldn't exist. And I think the lovely thing of imagining it does is that with Doctor Who, we always see the moments of the hyper moments of the Doctor Who universe where things are really going crazy. Largely, not just because the Doctor's there, but because he's dealing with something which is beyond the norm that doesn't normally happen. So you're seeing those extreme moments. So if you imagine, say, like, as we said, the Sunmakers being an extreme moment where this alien from another world comes in and totally reconstructs or even deconstructs a whole society, that is an unusual thing. But on the everyday basis, would that sort of world be like Lake Seven, where you'd have freedom fighters, you might have... Yeah. Some pockets of alienness if you go to the frontiers, which for Blake Seven is pretty he much would. The point.
And well, I mean, look, the Ultra World guys who are just sort of blue things in suits that are, you know, it's the old coming back to my beloved Horns of Nymon. If you go with the original intent in the script that those big bull heads were just supposed to be sort of helmets that sort of Earthlings wore, then it could be. A race of Earth beings from somewhere else who dress up as the Nymon and have all these powers, but really they're all about just stripping all the energy out and popping to the next one through a black hole.
But that is the similarity between both, is that both of them tend to deal with magic as high technology, and both those series have that sort of crossover, which I think you're right, does sort of unite them in that sort of sense. And it's kind of fascinating because going back to the other week, we talked about Keeper of Trakan, and you could see that in a Blake Seven universe. That they're aliens rather than humans, but that if you went further enough afield in time and space, that world you could see,
I could see the Liberator landing there. I could see that they've heard about this amazing Keeper where it's dead peaceful. And Villa goes, "What? There's nothing to steal." "Nothing, Villa. Absolutely nothing. Nobody steals." I could see that.
And equally, if you go into the 80s, we get that slightly, again, a different change in tone. You could see Scorpio docking with the ship, the Hyperion, in Fervoids. There's, again, not massively dissimilar to the ship we see in, what's it called? Is it the one with the two Tyrants, Death? That one, or Gold in Series 4 with Scorpio.
Terminus fits beautifully in the Blake Seven verse. You know, you could see the Liberator locking on to the leper ship. You could see all the stuff going on in Terminus with the Hydromel and the guards. All of that fits beautifully. In fact, it's probably easier to say which bits of late 70s and 80s Doctor Who can't you do in the Blake Seven universe? There aren't many of them. Castrovalva, probably. Or maybe not. Maybe you can do Castrovalva.
Because there's nothing in the Blake Seven universe which can't fit in the Doctor Who universe, especially in terms of technology. You know, you have transmats, you have TMAT, you have teleporters, you have faster than light ships, you have aliens. Although they're largely infrequent to some degree in Blake Seven, they do exist in various pockets. There are colonies. Yeah. Colonies, like you say, which in both universes would quite happily be reconstructions of places from Britain by bit. Constructed worlds. Anything in Blake Seven could work in Doctor Who.
More worryingly, narratively, they're both the same. It always usually starts with a bit of a preamble that doesn't involve the Doctor. A scene then, an establishing scene on the Liberator with the crew having a bit of a bitch. Then they arrive where they're going to arrive, and then we're into the action. Then we blow something up at the end, and then we bugger off again.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a certain amount of almost anthology to Blake Seven as there is to, as much as there is serialization. In terms of those, again, those sort of genre shifts and different spaces with different sets of new characters that become almost like the partial focus, which both of them do, where the stories is almost much about them and then our characters interfering with that anthology. It's almost like an interfered anthology, I would call it. That's very interesting. I've got another one, actually, because I think I've mentioned before in the podcast is Dalek, where in the showcase in the bit at the beginning with all the trophies, there appears to be a xenomorph egg at the back, which there is actually a capture, which unfortunately I'm sure Christian can put in the show notes, but I'll just send that over so the people in this chat can see it in real time. Which I noticed at the time, and I've always been amazed. No, very few people seem to have picked up on it. But size and
it's full of goodies. That whole opening scene, isn't it? There's lots of lovely stuff in there. I love Van Staten, and I love that whole world and the obsessive collector. It's a sort of theme that doesn't get explored often enough in Doctor Who, really.
Mm.
That desire to catalog, to curate, to control, and Van Staten doesn't think he's the villain at all. He's an important collector and curator.
Which, interestingly, that sort of interest, money, and hubris is sort of very much a factor of the sort of extended Xenomorph universe, where you'll get a lot of people like that who will be the type to unleash a terror because they want to collect it and keep it and trophy it.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, Van Staten situates very well in that sort of universe.
Yes, he does. Well, it's like the old, it's like the old Davros moment, you know, but done with missing episodes. If you had a missing episode, what would you do with it? Would you hand it back like a good Boy Scout, or would you sit on it? It's very interesting. I can't necessarily say, yeah, I'd ring them up the next day and they could have it back for free. You'd want to, you know, at what point does it own you? Interesting.
Yeah, I think the fascinating thing with Doctor Who is because it has that ability to travel anywhere in any time, and not just simply that, but the person in control of that vessel is of a level of power beyond sort of conventional universes of virtually any technological age. It does mean every time that he appears, it's an epoch, there's an event that's going on there which is beyond the norm. So in a sense, you're seeing these really rarefied moments in Doctor Who, and you do wonder when you see all these other things which exist in a similar sort of fantastical world, and you can include things, I guess, like Alien or Terminator, mm-hmm. or which all share little bits of things that Doctor Who is often homage themselves. They could sort of exist because they are the sort of norm things, even if they themselves are moments of spectacle. They are still, in comparison to where Doctor Who sits, which is at the top end of the scale.
This is true. I still, in my heart of hearts, want the original Doctor Who Weekly, Dave Gibbons, Pat Mills Doctor, to get to Benidorm in the late 70s, as he tried every week, and relax in the sun and have a big, you know, full English breakfast and far too many pints, and possibly thwart an awakening of the sea devils coming off Benidorm prom, and then back for an evening of karaoke. I'm not sure it would make for riveting telly, but I would like to think that happened. I suppose actually it's Neil Gaiman gets us out of that with the I didn't take you where you wanted to go, I took you where you needed to go with the TARDIS. So even that gets explained.
Do you think then, I mean, this is a sort of a weird sort of suggestion of a crossover, it's more adaptation, but the comics world of Doctor Who, would it be really interesting and fun if a lot of that managed to totally divorce itself from trying to be part of the television? And Dave Gibbons' Doctor Who would become...
At its best, it's a different show.
Yes.
I always think the Doctor Who comics are smaller when they're trying to seamlessly fit in to the show. When they're at their most confident and expansive, and they're doing their own thing, they're the ones that endure.
But it would be wonderful to have a return to that Dave Gibbons era, drawn and written by other people, but specifically moulded around all the trappings So you'd have the TARDIS would have that look that Dave Gibbons gives it, the sort of expressions of that Doctor, the world, the way that he approaches it. It'd be kind of cool to see that in its, like, a continuation in its own universe. in the same way that Spider-Man exists in movie, television, comic forms, and while they may share similar stories, we never try and sort of pull them into the same.
We've kind of got our heads around this, you know, in the same way that, let's say, the lovely Paul Mars Nest Cottage audios are considered to exist in their own little pocket universe, and they're gorgeous and beautiful, but they are their own thing. And you're right, the Gibbons, Mills, Des Skin strips live in their world. The Parkhouse Sixth Doctor stuff like Voyager, that all lives in its own world. And it's sophisticated. Anyway, I've got another crossover to throw at you.
Yeah.
And this one's far more obvious in a way, because really the leads are the Doctor, is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Is late era Tom Baker by any other name.
Well, and also you have Oolong Kalufid referenced in Destiny of the Daleks.
Oh, always a pleasure. but in Ford and Ford and Arthur,
yes.
I always think that that's a composite of the Doctor.
Yes.
Both those characters. The Doctor is a composite of those two.
Well, how many people have cried out over the years for David Dixon to actually play the Doctor? As a sort of alternate version of what we'd have got with Davison if we'd had him. Especially in that first episode, in the episode one of Hitchhikers, if we talk about the TV show rather than the radio play,
which I think is the definitive article, the TV adaptation, if I'm being honest.
I'd love, yes, same here.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's that idea that, I mean, of course, you know, by the time you get to the third Hitchhikers book, then, you know, that is Douglas Adams's Doctor Who film script, which has been hastily rewritten. So where you've got the Doctor, those lines must be split between Arthur and Zaphod, and Arthur and Ford. They must be.
Which is the life, universe and everything, isn't it?
Yeah, which I suppose is, well, I suppose if anyone's read The Cricket Men, it'll be more obvious in there, I guess.
But yeah, I think again, obviously with the TV series, though, you've got the aesthetic as well, which marries
very much the aesthetic.
So we can actually sidestep from Douglas Adams towards Michael Moorcock, who wrote the first of BBC Novel's big Doctor Who hardbacks in 2010.
That long ago. Is it any good?
It's The Coming of the Terrifiles. It's not bad, but
is this the Pertwee one?
Isn't the Pertwee one. No, that was another esteemed author. This one, whose name escapes me at the moment. Was it Stephen Baxter? No, it was Stephen. Oh, I'm not sure if it was Stephen Baxter or someone else now. But no, The Coming of the Terrifiles by Michael Moorcock has a sort of P.G. Woodhouse sort of flavour to it.
Nice.
And there's influences from Woodhouse and Douglas Adams, but it takes place more or less in Moorcock's usual multiverse setting, where most of his books take place. So that is a out and out crossover, really. There's even different laws of physics taking place in there. It feels like there's a different law of physics taking place in there with the local universe that the Doctor finds himself in with Amy. So that's interesting. Did I hear someone tapping away at the keyboard there to double check?
Yes, I wasn't double checking you. It's just I'd know very little about it, so I was just having a quick read. A demented P.G. Woodhouse pastiche.
Oh.
Yeah, well, there you go then, yeah. I wouldn't have called it that.
But that's, so there's an obvious attempt to sort of really push it through an obvious multiverse, I suppose, a little bit like, as you said, the Chris Boucher, and then later from Boucher, Alan Stevens stuff, with the Robots of Death crossovers. Yeah. I mean, if I go back to the comics, I quite like, but they don't really fit, is the Marvel crossovers that you get with Death's Head in the late 80s, which are kind of fun, and the Sleaze Brothers and Fantastic Four and Iron Man. And I think, is it the Hulk they crossover with as well? But again, that
it
all
was a Hulk, it was a Hulk between... presents, that strange weekly thing.
Yes.
which is very odd.
But the but yeah, so Death's Head is the sort of route between the Doctor Who and the Marvel Universe, which it crosses. Yes.
And the Transformers.
And the Transformers, well, yes.
Yes. Yes.
And Doctor Who's inherent Death's Head's inherent scale issues.
Yes. Oh yes.
One week he's sort of 9 foot tall, towering over the Doctor, and then like 2 weeks later he's the same size as Galvatron.
But that's the tissue compression eliminator, isn't it? That's the Masters. So again, a very strong tie into Doctor Who. But again, is one of those things in the comics fields which works really well and becomes a lovely little pocket verses themselves. But I guess, sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say, here's one for you, James, because I know you are a connoisseur of this particular universe. Can you imagine a way in which the Doctor fits in, or how he would fare in the Star Wars universe, which is, lest us forget, probably the biggest and most commercial and probably as well developed?
It's, well, I mean, at one point I'd have said it's really difficult to consider. Because Star Wars, again, is a universe which never mentions time travel or has those sort of feelings within it. Because, I'm not saying it couldn't exist, but the aesthetics of the universe is doesn't sort of preclude that sort of event horizon, maybe. I don't know what the word would be. But at the same time, you get into things like the Clone Wars and Rebels, and it starts to really open up the Force as something which has very much a sort of mystic other realms and in fact elements of time travel which pop into Rebels within its own universe. But so in a sense you could be hard argued, especially since it's a long time ago somewhere different, and you could also argue it might follow the same sort of rules and logics and mechanics of Battlestar Galactica in that whole it's happened before, so you know, and it will happen again, so you get this circular notions that civilizations almost throughout external forces, non-ephemeral forces, maybe eternals, who knows, keep shaping these cycles to happen over and over. There's no reason something like Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica couldn't exist further back in time in very similar constructs as our societies, because they are constantly replicated by broader and bigger eternal forces, which is, you know, some degrees of what the Eternals are postulated to do, certainly within the Seventh Doctor's era, if you think of Fenric as maybe an Eternal of some form, and certainly in the New Adventures as well, why not? So yeah, it would be difficult because Star Wars is so alien, you don't have any Earth connections, unless of course we start looking at some of the comic bound stuff that they've done, which has been a bit of fun. They've had that one with the, we've talked about this before, the Han Solo Indiana Jones crossover, where Han Solo and the Falcon crashes on Earth, and Han is killed, but Chewbacca survives, and Indiana Jones is going out searching for the Yeti or some sort, which invariably is Chewbacca, who's now left in the wilderness of Earth, and he finds the bones and what's left over of the Falcon. So you have some interesting crossovers there, which would then sort of move you along and go, okay, well, if we can have Indiana Jones in Star Wars, how far are we from putting Doctor Who in there, which has aliens as Indiana Jones has? And arguable mystical forces. I suppose religion is not particularly well favoured in Doctor Who as being something other than high technology, but maybe the Ark of the Covenant in Raiders of the Lost Ark is not about God, it's something high tech that the Doctor would talk about. I think obviously it's fiction, so everything's malleable, everything is connectable. And because Doctor Who deals with so many genres, so many different areas, time and space, different characters, different tones, different possibilities, there's no way you cannot argue that you can cross over with virtually anything. But it's whether how digestible that is for audiences.
I don't think he fits easily into the Star Wars universe, actually. I think there's a sort of new adventures, hard-edged, ruthless McCoy and Ace that fits into the Star Wars universe reasonably well, but I'm not sure any of the others do.
Well, let's take a segment of the Star Wars universe. If you look at, say, Rogue One, which pulls out all the again the high event stuff that Star Wars deals with, the blowing up of the Death Star, the death of Darth Vader, and all this sort of stuff, and takes sort of fairly low-key characters. The events of that show, of that film, you could probably drop a Doctor into it. Yes, he would upset them because if nothing else, he's a British person who's not evil, but also he's heavily Earth-based, isn't he?
Where does he sit in that narrative, though, James?
Well, again,
he doesn't sit anywhere comfortably in that.
I don't know. I think you could probably put him in a lot of places in those narratives. I could see a police box landing in that city that's destroyed. See, this is how good a Star Wars fan is. I have no clue what it's called.
Oh, Jakku. Jakku.
Is it Jakku? Yeah, I think it might be. Yeah. Well done. You're clearly the Star Wars fan. I could see that sort of world the Doctor stepping out into. I could see there being a massive planet-destroying space station in Doctor Who, which sounds almost like something you'd imagine Douglas Adams. It's so absurd, given that you don't need a space station to destroy a planet.
But what does he do? He doesn't fly an X-Wing, so he's not going to fly an X-Wing and sort it out that way. He's not going to pick up a lightsaber and take on Darth Vader.
Well,
he's going to storm the castle in Jakku. He maybe has a cup of tea and a couple of sausages with Yoda on Dagobah.
Well, I mean, I see what you're doing. I would say that trivializes it a bit. I mean, I would say the adventure would go in a different direction because you've still got the oppressor and the oppressed, which is very much about Doctor Who. So it'd be very much about him on Jakku learning what's going on, escaping the destruction, probably materializing on his Star Destroyer, and then moving himself up the chain until he defeats the Emperor at the top. And then breaking it all down and then heading off. And like you say, the whole galaxy dying of starvation because the infrastructure has been destroyed in a day and no one can get food anymore. And he heads off onto different adventures. So it'd be heavily truncated, heavily, I don't want to say trivialized, but the power that you see in Star Wars would become something which within the Doctor Who universe, he'd be able to manage against.
Actually, I'll give you that. I could imagine, for instance, you know, the big throne room confrontation in Return of the Jedi. I could imagine it being the Doctor, and it always comes back to McCoy in my head.
Yes, it does in my head as well, because I'm thinking Ragnarok.
The Seventh Doctor and the Emperor sort of dueling barbs,
yes,
while Ace is having a lightsaber fight with Darth Vader, and there's all sorts of stuff from her past coming out to sort of pull her either way, liking Curse of Fenric. Okay, I can now see the Seventh Doctor fitting into Star Wars.
Well,
all right,
you can see a New Adventures almost there, in because New Adventures did play a lot with some of the hardcore sci-fi worlds.
I think New Adventure gives you a sort of, if you take the New Adventures Doctor, you can pretty much put that in any extreme sci-fi situation.
Yes.
Certainly the Doctor fits into Blade Runner fine. He fits into Aliens fine. He fits,
yes,
into Star Wars fine. Okay.
So yeah, is there a question then of production and format that makes it difficult? That we envision the Doctor in fairly, because the production size is small, even in the new show, to do something like Star Wars is a very big thing to do. So you can't really imagine that being, and then the size, you know, 40 minutes, 45 minutes tops for the new show, 90 minutes for an old show against, you know, a massive, at least, you know, three trilogies worth of films. Does it feel like it just doesn't, it's not compatible because of those sort of...
It has a sense when we see the Star Wars telly show.
That is true.
Yeah,
but I mean, again, like I said, you can see a little bit of it maybe in things like Rebels, which does deal with it more on the low key and is done in sort of like 25 minute segments. But yeah, to me, I see the same as you. I envisage a McCoy. I envisage a playoff against the Emperor in the same way he plays off against Ragnarok. I can envisage them landing in a sort of bustling marketplace like Jakku, but it would be a very... the sets and the production would be far more compact. You wouldn't have the scale and you know all that big battle in the city center you get in Rogue One. The Death Star would probably be the place where Palpatine would be, just to sort of minimize the jumping around the place.
To be honest, you're right. It's a reordering of the production, and you know what?
the Doctor would basically take Obi-Wan's place in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yes, that's interesting.
But wouldn't be run through by Darth Vader.
Well, yeah, okay, that is really interesting if you take, say, Star Wars, as in The New Hope, and you have the Doctor landing on Tatooine and helping a local boy who is part of an oppressed world of oppressed regime who have got a big star-destroying, star-killer thing. Yes. Yeah. And then he helps that boy go on with his adventure while he's sort of, again, I'm thinking McCoy again in my head so far, as it's slightly peripheral.
It has to be. Yeah, you're right.
I'm surprised no one's done this already. A little bit of a sidestep.
Okay.
There are a couple of BBC crossovers that we haven't mentioned. One's obvious and one's not so obvious.
Well, Fawlty Towers.
No. EastEnders, Dimensions in Time.
Landing in Fawlty Towers in 1979.
Dimensions in Time, Gareth.
And driving him mad while he's staying there with Romana.
It's delicious, I know. But no, Dimensions in Time.
Oh, yes.
Yes. But there's also, now in the 90s, I remember reading in SFX that there was a story going around that there was going to be a Doctor Who crossover with Red Dwarf, in which Daleks would feature in Red Dwarf, which never transpired. However, I've a brief search of the internet, I should say, and it turns out that a Red Dwarf production special effects crew placed a tiny police box in the blue midget hangar in series 3 of Red Dwarf.
But it's not in shot, unfortunately. You won't see it on.
But it's
this is like where occasionally, isn't there a shot where you see an eagle from Space 1999 on one of the in Sirens, I think it was, on one of the asteroids?
Yes, that is true. There is bits, and I'm not, yeah. But, you know, we see a lot of those. I mean, those are fun in television. I mean, in Battlestar Galactica's opening of the revisioned one, there is Serenity from Firefly flies overhead in one shot, and then amongst the fleet later on at the back end of that pilot, the Enterprise is actually very visible in that fleet in the background, which is bizarre. And I've always thought there's a space to be doing stories that explain these sort of weird little elements that are in these shows, like how the Enterprise pops into the Battlestar Galactic universe for a moment and then sods off. But the Red Dwarf, technically there is that moment. I mean, again, it's eras, isn't it? Because Red Dwarf fits very well in a lot of Doctor Who. Particularly
Graham Williams' really crossover. That very true. Yeah.
And there's a sort of an... Yeah.
Yeah, I could see Ace on the Jupiter mining. Again, it's always McCoy. which I think the reason... Well, let's look at why McCoy probably fits better than anyone into anything else. I think it's New because... Adventures. It's a combination of the new adventures, and I think we have to give Andrew Cartmell a great deal of credit here, because he strips everything away and makes it a far more on-trend, interesting show of the moment, more interested in ideas than just slavishly tying in. So it fits very well into the 2000 AD verse, you know. Paradise Towers, the one where he really makes his, you know, he hits that. That's his vision, not Time and the Rani. That's the BBC TV adaptation of Halo Jones that happens to have the Doctor in it. That's, you know, all of that stuff is he's on trend and he's in tune with what's going on in sci-fi and British sci-fi at the time and comics and other media. So I think there's a reason that. That's because that and the new adventures is why McCoy is so adaptable in a way that I'm not sure the other incarnations necessarily are.
But I think also because McCoy is, we could call McCoy more self-aware than the other characters, the other Doctors, which means when he drops into narratives, it feels like he's dropping into other people's stories rather than being part of a story. So say the Visitation, you know, the Doctor wanders into event and becomes part of that story. Happiness Patrol, he goes to a planet and you are sort of seeing the events of that planet and him sort of almost like a virus coming into another into an almost like, almost invasively. And that happens a lot in McCoy's eras, which is why I think we can imagine him appearing in these sort of worlds. And the same, and there's even a bit of that in his first season as well, where it's, there's a kind of, also I noticed when I was a kid, like with Dragonfire, I found it absolutely fascinating as a kid. You have this moment, which has happened before, but it is rare, where you have a scene where everyone's wandering around and the police box materializes and no one gives a damn. And they just walk out. And it's because it's in the middle of a sort of almost like in a supermarket. It's the freezer section, isn't it? And to me as a kid, that sort of blew me away, is that no one seems to care. It's as if he's just seamlessly walked. And that's very different Doctor Who. It felt it to me as a kid. And I think that's possibly why we sort of have this feeling with McCoy, that he sort of has a different relationship to those stories, and which then Cartmell really pushes forward. And I think that is fascinating. Curse of Fenric, Remembrance of the Daleks, Silver Nemesis even, to a degree. Greatest Show in the Galaxy. And because they're also very genre different as well, Happiness Patrol to Battlefield to Survival, we can sort of picture him in very different genres too.
You're right. Those 3 years, and then, of course, however many years, was it 5 years of New Adventures? 5-6 years?
I feel
that,
longer.
That means that the McCoy era is not far off 10 years.
Yeah. Well, there was always at the time people who were very pro-McCoy against this notion, which by then he was not golden era of Doctor Who, was his tenure was actually technically longer than any of them. Because he was the lead character up until McGann's film, where he passed away in 96.
His era is 11 years running.
Yeah, he doesn't hand over till that point. If you don't create a tier of what is Doctor Who, there is so much McCoy material, and even more so thanks since Big Adventures. So yeah, I think maybe you're right. That's why we sort of kind of have this ability to draw on him more than any of the others.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to round off this month's podcast with a K, or this podcast with a K. What do you think, dear listener, about Doctor Who crossovers? Is the Seventh Doctor the best person for a crossover? And would you have liked to see a Dalek in Red Dwarf?
I'd like to have seen him in P.G. Woodhouse. Now we're talking about P.G. Woodhouse. In Cheese and Worcester, that would be interesting.
Oh, wouldn't
ITV
it just?
Version with Hugh and Lauren, Stephen Fry, and Sylvester McCoy, or Peter Davison.
Peter Davison would be perfect, yes.
Leave
your comments below, as ever, on Facebook, or find us on iTunes, and leave a review, that always helps. Until next time, it's goodbye from the three of us. Bye-bye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.